are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
I'm your host for Finding Your Forte, our talk radio show. We're really excited to be hosted on Up to Me's radio show lineup, and we look forward to each week bringing you a new guest that is to share some of the exciting work they're doing in pursuit of their own purpose and impact in an effort to highlight those stories and hopefully inspire others to do the same. I am always fascinated and excited by some of the work that I have the privilege to be able to see at close range with a number of the clients that work with within Your Crescendo. And to give a little bit of a background on Your Crescendo, so we are on a mission to get the world on purpose and with impact. And that shows up for us in a really pointed and compelling way when we have the opportunity to work with leaders and professionals to bring and align their purpose with their business and their careers. That shows up for us through coaching and leadership development and building high-performing teams on purpose. We also get involved in some placement work to help companies bring the right talent that's not only qualified for work that they need within their teams, but also likely to tap into their person's strengths and passions. And so all things purpose that bring greater performance from a business perspective, greater alignment, and give people a strategic perspective on their business and their careers are things that we're super excited to be involved with. I am elated and over the moon excited to introduce you to our guest this morning. We are excited to share with you and introduce you to Erica Williams, and she is the founder and managing principal for the Alberio Group. And this would be a good conversation in that, you know, as we prepare for today, I've told her we're just going to have one of our normal conversations that we have sometimes daily or minimally weekly, and just happen to have a few listeners join us. Because I think that each and every conversation with her is enriching, mostly because of the impact of her work. It's highly inspirational to just on a daily basis watch the impact of that work occur. And I think it will give really poignant insights for anyone having the opportunity to peek in on that work to see how, given the opportunity to strategically direct the work that they're doing through their careers and their business, they too can do that kind of work. And so we will get into it here just now. I'd like to introduce you, all of our listeners, to Erica Williams. Erica, are you there? Can you say hello?
Good morning.
Good morning, Erica. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you so much, Reggie, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share more about the Alberio Group and all the wonderful things that are happening in our communities. So thanks again for thinking of me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is actually a really natural conversation to bring to the surface. And, you know, there's so many places we could start. So I think before I dive in on a number of things that I'm excited to bring to the conversation, I think I'll just kind of step back, and I would love to have you kind of bring a little bit of a guided tour through who you are and some of the places you've been and some of the experiences that you're really excited to, you know, give us quick glimpses at. And then we'll pick a couple points that we're really excited about and dive deep. Would you do that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started my career in investment banking. I used to work for Morgan Stanley kind of right out of college in their mergers and acquisitions and restructuring department at a time where mergers and acquisitions were hot. You know, there was a lot of stuff happening and high energy, and it was a wonderful learning experience, not only kind of working for an institution like Morgan Stanley, but really, you know, you learn a lot about kind of who you want to be in a career and in a workplace. And so it was exciting, and again, a lot of things happening, and it ended up that, you know, I was working really, really long hours. And I had not bargained for that part of it. I knew that, you know, it was, you know, high pressure environment. You know, everyone has to be on, you know, pretty much 24/7. But I had not anticipated, you know, the 70, 80 hour weeks, you know, coming in on
right.
the weekend, you know, to get a deal closed. So while exciting, I was thinking, I don't know if I want to make, you know, this my lifetime career. But
right.
I knew that there were wonderful people at Morgan Stanley, a wonderful firm, great leadership. And I wanted to figure out a way. So even in those 70, 80-hour weeks, I was still finding time, amazingly enough, to volunteer. To, you know, Morgan Stanley at the time had a really wonderful volunteer incentive program. And, you know, there would be walks and runs and 5Ks and volunteering. And I still found time to do that. And people would ask me all the time, how are you doing this? And I realized it's because I really care about people. I really care about communities. I really care about that work. And so and despite the fact that I was tired and working long hours, I found that I was rejuvenated when having an opportunity to sit down with an executive director or talk to them about board placements and things of that nature. So I figured out a way, you know, I really think I want to pursue more of this, learn more about this kind of, you know, community development, if you will, nonprofit management. But I didn't want to leave this nice job and with great benefits, right? You know, that's usually what drives
right.
some of our career decisions. Like, well, I don't know if I want to give that up.
Right,
so,
right.
I started asking questions, and in the process, just, you know, really informational interviews, talking to people. And I learned that Morgan Stanley had a foundation, a community affairs department. And I sat down and talked with the executive director of the community affairs department. And before that, I knew I wanted to go back to school and get my master's. And I was trying to figure out what did I want to get my master's in. And at, you know, before I started at Morgan Stanley, I thought it would automatically be an MBA. Of course, that's what I would be doing. But then when I realized that that's really not kind of what I wanted to do, I started looking at other programs in that urban policy, community development field. And Morgan Stanley offered a wonderful tuition reimbursement program at the time, full ride pretty much. But you had to do it. You had to, in order to get your master's, and Morgan Stanley would pay for it, it had to be related to your career. And so I said, or to the field that you were in, and I said, there has to be a way around this. And so that's how I started having these informational interviews. I met with the executive director of the foundation. She pretty much offered me a job on the spot. And that's how I got into community affairs and philanthropy. And at the time, I really didn't know much about the field, but it felt right. So that's kind of how I started. And at the time, I was managing diversity and grant making, really kind of trying to open the field for people of color, the financial services industry for people of color. And we did that
okay.
in various ways, scholarships, you know, fellowships for professorships, and really creating a mentorship and really, again, trying to cultivate a pipeline for diverse talent for the financial services sector. And I also invested, managed the grant making for our arts and cultural grant making. And this was really all across the firm and global. We were doing this work. Wherever Morgan Stanley had an office, we were doing this work. And it was wonderful. It really was life-changing for me. And I knew, you know, at the time there weren't a lot of people of color in the field and in the philanthropic sector, and there still really isn't.
Okay.
It certainly has changed and evolved. But, you know, I realized that a lot of times I'd be in boardrooms and there would be few people of color kind of making decisions about, you know, what organizations, what communities got the support and capacity support that they needed, whether it be financial or technical assistance. And I said, you know, I like that. I like being able to influence those kinds of policies and practices for the sector. And then, you know, having grown up with a single parent, my mother relied greatly on the support of nonprofit organizations, you know, whether it be after school programs or weekend programs. You know, I don't know where I would be without organizations in our community really supporting the lives of children and families. And so it came full circle for me. Of course, I wanted to give back in a meaningful way. And having the opportunity with a firm like Morgan Stanley behind us with the kinds of resources and investments that they were making, it just felt good. So,
you know,
I'll stop there and let you, because there's so much I can say about that. But
I know, right?
I'm kind of getting emotional thinking about kind of how I made that kind of that pivot. And it brought me to, you know, kind of where I am today.
Yeah, I mean, and it would be, you know, really easy to just kind of sit back and let your story play out, because I think it is so inspiring. You know, one of the dots that connect when I listen to, and you know, because we're so often so busy, you know, with the work that, you know, we're partnering to do together, I don't get an opportunity to kind of, you know, pull back. But I think the really compelling dots that connect in your career is how you started with this point of view of the world from an investment perspective, and just understanding money and like how money moves, and then to, you know, follow your heart to, you know, philanthropy and, you know, empowerment of communities and families and children, and to bring that point of view, that voice, through the lens of someone that came through as on, you know, 360 degrees in terms of, you know, being, you know, a stakeholder, an advocate, a subject matter expert. I mean, there's you've been all around this issue, like, and what I find so really, you know, really fascinating about that is, you know, that's kind of what you bring to situations where you have the opportunity to empower and uplift communities and families. I mean, and I'm just, you know, it's easy to overlook just the thrill of the work that you're doing, just because because you and I have the opportunity to be so on a daily
sure.
basis, be so inundated. But you know, it is absolutely fascinating work, and I am humbled and honored to have the opportunity to, you know, help empower you being able to be effective at it.
That's why I love you, Reggie, because you frame me up so nicely. Like that I could not have said it better myself. Yes.
Well, I will absolutely take that, and just know that the love is mutual, and that would explain why we have the opportunity to work together for years on end now. But we should probably, I think that will be a really good kind of segue to give a little bit of a bird's eye view with regard to the Alberio Group and the really, you know, exciting work that you're doing. I'm introducing you to, you know, opportunities and or people, or think about framing you to, you know, folks that might be interested in you, I always kind of get caught up in the excitement of it, and my elevator pitch becomes more of a escalator ride through skyscrapers, because there's so much richness there. But, you know, if I'm able to kind of keep it, boil it down to, you know, concisely to the work that that you have the opportunity to lead for your clients, primarily you're driving fund development and performance evaluation and then strategic planning and visioning for a number of the organizations that usually have some type of community empowerment, whether it's, you know, families or children, and, you know, enrichment from a community perspective in a way that allows them to be more efficient. I mean, that's, you know, that's my bird's eye view, but I'd love to have you share your own perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a really great way to sum it up. When we started Albireo, our intention really was to work with social purpose-driven organizations, helping them to deliver more of their mission. And as you would put it, as your crescendo would put it, you know, be on purpose, deliver more of their purpose, and in the most efficient and effective way. And, you know, our society has, you know, has not always put a priority or a value on the social services sector. It hasn't been important enough. You know, so kind of thinking about, you know, where I've come from, very in a corporate space, you know, it's clear, you know, where our money is. Where, you know, they say, put your money where your mouth is, right?
Right, exactly.
And then we would see social service organizations who were doing wonderful work supporting communities and housing initiatives and workforce development initiatives and supporting our seniors, our elders. You know, they were getting pretty much the short end of the stick, you know, really trying to make it work with bare-bone budgets. And, you know, we come to this work really trying to turn that on its head. You know, I'm always encouraging organizations. I mean, the dynamic that we've set up, particularly like in philanthropy and in the sector, is, you know, it's kind of we're penny pinching, scraping all the time. It's this mindset of trying to, you know, pull it together, you know, pull the pieces together to make it work and keep the doors open of very worthy organizations. And having worked in the philanthropic sector for more than 15 years, you know, I'm always encouraging organizations to say what it costs, you know, to ask for what it costs. You know, if it costs $1 million to support 100, you know, students, you know, as they transition from middle school to high school and really getting them on the path to college and career, if that's what it costs, say that, so that the sector, the philanthropic sector, kind of has a reality check about what it takes to really move this work forward. I don't want nonprofits that we're partnering with to think that, well, we can't ask for that much because we'll never get it. Or I also want nonprofit organizations to be thinking about strategies and ways to really sustain their work, to be more self-sufficient. And that's not easy. You know, that's not easy because organizations are mired in the day-to-day. You know, again, they're just trying to keep the doors open. So, you know, they don't have a lot of mental space to think about strategies to, you know, well, how can we turn this into a revenue income-producing piece for our organization? How do we snatch up this piece of land that might be on auction that would support our communities? It could be a revenue earner for us. You know, they don't have a whole lot of mental space to do that, right? Most organizations are planning, doing a strategic planning process, what, once every 5 years? And, like, as time progresses, you know, a lot happens in 5 years. There's a lot of opportunities that in the corporate sector they can just jump on. But in the nonprofit sector, when opportunities like this come up, they don't necessarily have the capacity, the time, the strength, the manpower to make those things happen. So what the Albireo group tries to do is step in and kind of be, like you said, the advocate for organizations, to be the thought partner for organizations, to kind of create a little cushion, a little space to help organizations think more broadly about what it means to be sustaining, self-sufficient, doing this work in a real valuable way, adding value and impact to communities, but, you know, not worrying about the doors closing at the end of the quarter. You know, that's what the Albireo group is about.
Yeah, and that so much, there's so much richness there that we can, you know, unpack. And I think that, you know, what, frankly, what resonates for me is this clarity of calling around socially purpose-driven organizations,
mm-hmm.
being the audience that you would impact, and then the opportunity to, you know, really change the conversation from being as a nonprofit, you know, give us money so that we can do good, to as a nonprofit, how do we take what we do and add value through the lens of, you know, social enterprises. That's a really important transformation.
Right.
And I'm always elated to see you, you know, shift minds for clients in that way, because it's a really important, you know, kind of mind shift that leaders need to kind of wrap their arms around in order to be able to have sustainable streams of funding for the really important work that they're doing.
Absolutely. The other thing the other thing that I didn't say, usually when I start talking about the Albireo Group, people will ask me, you know, so what does Albireo mean? So Albireo, the word Albireo, it's actually named after a star. And for many, many years, astronomers thought that Albireo was just a single star, but then later learned that it is a binary star, meaning, you know, there's a star behind the other star, right? And so when I think about Albireo and what we're doing with clients, we really are helping our clients shine brighter. We want them to shine brighter, supporting them, kind of being the background to their foreground. And it illuminates. I mean, that's really the only word that I can think about. It illuminates for me what all of us have a role. Like, we all have a role to play in supporting good. It doesn't really matter. Like, you don't have to have your own consulting practice and doing this work to support good. I think we all do it in our way. And so whether that's, you know, making an annual donation to the Salvation Army, or, you know, tithing at church, we're all kind of helping organizations to shine a little brighter. I just like us to be a little bit more strategic about how that happens, and I guess that's my corporate hat. How do we be more strategic and again, to support organizations that can be here for a while?
That's really that's so powerful, this notion of being an illuminary. As an advocate, and I think a lot of people will take encouragement from hearing your story as they think about, you know, all too often we, particularly in the corporate realm, all too often people connect the work that they feel called to do, and they see it as, you know, they anticipate that the pivot to be able to get to do that work is either too sharp or requires too substantial of a shift. It's almost as if somebody's going to, like, if they start this conversation about work they feel called to do tomorrow, they're going to have to join the Peace Corps. When I think you are absolutely an illustration of just being intentional about the work, you know, being faithful about that work and how it's calling you, and, you know, thinking both with your head and your heart in terms of the impact that and being really mindful of where you place your energies and the goodness that can come from that. And from my perspective, that kind of leads us to this notion that I'll let you share your perspective on, about driving the triple bottom line, which I think is a really powerful one. And I'm, you know, as a consultant that came through, you know, my big five, you know, the time that I spent in, you know, driving transformation for, you know, companies, I've always been, you know, kind of a business case driven guy. Like, I'm always helping clients think about, you know, here are the benefits, here's what it's going to cost you, here's how you go pitch this, you know, this opportunity in a way that gets the right funding. So this notion of, you know, having bottom line driven decisions is one that I can absolutely resonate with. I think it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. But you bring another dimension, if you will, a third dimension, in this whole notion of managing the triple bottom line. So, you know, share a little bit about your perspective with regard to that and how it drives your work.
Sure. So, I mean, I think you said it around, you know, there is absolutely a way for all of us to do well and do good. You know, I make it clear to my clients that this is a for-profit business that I'm running, and so I'm aiming to make a profit in this business. But I think that sets me up as an example of, you know, I'm doing good work, and I believe that we should be compensated for that work. We should be compensated fairly, as I believe
right.
that teachers who are doing great work need to be compensated fairly for that work.
Right.
And the same for nonprofits. So, you know, I was intentional about setting up the Alberio Group as a for-profit entity because I wanted to be clear that, yes, you can be a for-profit entity. You can have your name on the side of a building one day, and you can be – I mean, our whole mission is about serving and doing good work. And so the triple bottom line for me is, and it's funny because I actually did a fellowship in Germany for a little over a year, and I was really focused on looking at women entrepreneurs and researching kind of their impact on this triple bottom line. So we all know women are wonderful, right? Women are great. No one.
We are very aware.
Right, no one will disagree
no one,
with that.
No one. If you find someone who disagrees with that, you have them come see me.
But women leaders and entrepreneurs, what I find very special about us is that we think about the triple bottom line always, right? We're always thinking about our bottom line. We're thinking about our families. We're thinking about our communities, whether it's the local PTA, whether it's volunteering in church 3 or 4 days days a week.
We
are embedded with this triple bottom line, right? So it's not
right.
just how we're making ends meet. It's also making sure that, you know, our children are cared for, that our communities are cared for. Well, it's really no different for, you know, the business sector. When I talk about the triple bottom line, it's, you know, those organizations, those entities, those corporations who are thinking, of course, yes, about their bottom line. But
right.
they add another bottom line when they're giving back. And so, you know, Morgan Stanley had a triple bottom line in the sense that, you know, it wasn't just their investment banking piece, but it was also their foundation and community affairs department, the philanthropic efforts that they were doing, the diversifying the financial services sector. You know, it's the other piece. So it's, yes, it's our bottom line, but it's also the opportunity to give back. And yes, we know that there's some benefits, there's some tax incentives to do that. You know, not every corporation
right.
does it just out of the kindness of their heart. But what I
right.
find is that, you know, when you do good, it can be contagious. It's one of those things where it boosts, you know, the research shows, you know, where when companies have really good work-life balance policies, when they have really good opportunities for employees to, you know, give $3,000 a year to their favorite nonprofit or charity, and then the firm will match that contribution. Research shows that people stay in these places longer because it's an opportunity for them to connect and feel like, you know, I'm making a difference. So,
wow.
you know, it's, you know, people can have, you know, it's, again, it's not a either or thing. Like you don't just have to be focused on your bottom line. You can be focused on your bottom line and also be thinking about how can you give back to make this world a better place. I think women entrepreneurs, women leaders are exceptional at this, again, because I think they just it's innate for us. But I think companies are taking a page out of our book. and thinking about, yeah, we're going to make a lot of money, and we're also going to give a lot too. I think that they're finding that when they're able to do that effectively, it makes a difference for the culture of their corporations and companies. So, that's what it means for me.
Yeah, you and I have been in a space where that has governed the work that we've doing for some time now. And as of late, I have been really encouraged by other movements really kind of starting to make some momentum in the same spirit. I mean, there's a movement called B Companies that's being led by Arianna Huffington and Richard Branson.
Yep.
And then there's the founder of Whole Foods who has social capitalism.
Yeah.
So, this whole notion of being, and then there's other companies that are connecting and really doing some powerful things with regard to purpose within their organizations. EY is doing some work. SunTrust is doing some financial empowerment work with regard to connecting to purpose. So companies are getting it and being much more forward and provocative in terms of the ways that they, engage their end consumers by connecting the purpose. And I think that's just been really fascinating and encouraging. That we're onto something,
I would agree.
And that while we're grinding it out on us, on the small projects that don't always have the brightest lights shined on them, that they are getting, they are noticed in the merits of that work and the way that they empower the community and the people that we serve, is being, recognized and through this recognition, rewarded in some way, but I think that for me, I think it would be really exciting to have you share, glimpses of some of the, specific clients and or projects that you're doing. And I think that, why don't we, before we do that, take a small, brief break. And I just want to connect the listeners and to let you know that you're listening to the Finding Your Forte show. And we will be right back after a brief break, and we'll give Erica an opportunity to share some of the projects and clients and the work that she's doing.
This is executive producer Mel D, and thank you for tuning in. We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new, uplifting, and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalists, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn Fields, Less Stuff, More Meaningful Life. An up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And there's so much more. So get your subscription today at up2memagazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
And we are back. If you are just tuning in or joining us, you are listening to the Finding Your Forte show, and I am your host, Reggie Hammond, and I'm excited to be sharing the hour with our guest, my friend and colleague, Erica Williams, founder and managing principal for the Alberio Group. And just before the break, she was sharing the big picture point of view with regard to the kind of work that she's able to drive with clients. And as promised just before the break, I wanted to give her the opportunity to give us a little bit even a closer look at some of the clients and work. There's so much great work that she's doing that I'm sure it will be tough for her to pick. Erica, if you don't mind, if you think about some of the work that you find either particularly fulfilling, and I know it's all relative for you because all your work is fulfilling, but either particularly fulfilling or really exciting to share, just that I think listeners would be fascinated to even know is happening. Are there any clients or projects that you know that come to mind that would might be, you know, that, that you'd be excited about sharing?
Sure. So there are a couple, and I'm trying to think kind of a cross issue area, you know, because that's the other thing about this work. There, you know, there are so many intersections, and you know, I was actually just talking earlier this morning about, you know, Fulton County government and, you know, Human Services Department, and you have your workforce development agencies, your aging agencies, your you know, children and youth services. And so, you know, when I think about Alberio, we've been fortunate to kind of have our tentacles in all kinds of places across, working across issue areas for communities. And so, you know, one of the projects that comes to mind is a project that we're doing with an organization in Atlanta, Premier Academy, a NACE-accredited early care and education child care facility. And the executive director there, Ms. Sandra Taylor, really has a real passion for children and really seeing them thrive and blossom. And not for just children, but for their parents and their extended families. And so she, in partnership with other organizations, are working on this project called Camp, and really what it is a project where partners come together to support the social emotional needs of children who are, you know, 3 to pre-K age. So, you know, we're seeing that, you know, some of our children, you know, are having, particularly children who are living in tougher communities, tougher neighborhoods, you know, a lot of children are dealing with a lot of different issues in their communities and in their homes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they just need a little extra support. And so with this project, partners come together to really provide the support and counseling that children and parents need to make sure that their social and emotional health needs are being cared for, they're being managed. To help make them have a smoother transition into kindergarten. And that work has really been wonderful because beyond the additional support that the children themselves receive through things like play therapy and other things, being able to kind of manage their emotions in the classroom in a child care setting, but parents also get support around, you know, how do we cope? How do we build networks to support each other in communities, right? Amongst other parents. So, you know, these are things that, you know, we shouldn't take for granted that everyone knows how to do this. Sometimes these things need to be facilitated. And what I find wonderful about Premier Academy is that they don't just kind of, you know, open, you know, 8 to 5, you know, give us your children and we'll take it from here. They really see it as a partnership with parents, extended families, grandparents, and communities to really support our children. And so I'm supporting the evaluation of those efforts, really helping Premier Academy really think through how they're telling their story in terms of impact, the long-term implications for this work, how it can be replicated and sustained, how are we sharing promising practices, what we're learning in the collaborative, with other groups across the country. So that's one project that I'm really excited about because I think we're learning so much that that's what I love about evaluation, right? That you can see kind of what's working, what's not working, make some course corrections and really get into a place where, this can be replicable, or that really didn't work. We probably need to rethink that. But really, again, because while Premier Academy is in busy doing, I can kind of be like the person kind of taking a step back and thinking about the impact of that work long term. So that's one really exciting project that I'm finding a great deal of pleasure, again, out of, you know, supporting them and helping them tell their story, not only to their funders, but to other funders so that we can actually leverage support for projects like this. So that's one example. Another example is for the Annie E. Casey Foundation, supporting their True Generation work, where we're really looking at how sites, nonprofit organizations, workforce development centers are really approaching this, just what they call a two-generation approach, where they're supporting the workforce development goals of the parents, but they see clearly that in supporting the workforce development goals of parents, you also have to think about the children. And sometimes it could be removing barriers like child care, right? Like if I don't have appropriate quality child care, getting to work might be challenging for me. So, you know, they're really thinking about it. You know, we have to, we can't think about these issues in isolation. You know, usually where there are parents who need to work, there are little eyes looking at them.
Right.
Because they need some things, right? So, you know, and how do children, when parents do transition into work, how do children fare? What kind of supports do they need, whether it be after school support, you know, mentorship for them? So really thinking about it and not just the singular with tunnel vision about how we get parents, you know, people back to work, really thinking about also the support that children need. So we're working with them on really making sure that their goals for both adults and children are aligned, and that the strategies and services that they're delivering make sense for what they want to accomplish. So that's one project. Another project that I'm working on is with an arts education foundation in New York, where the foundation is supporting actual school principals bring arts education programming back into the schools. I think we're all aware that we're in a crisis with our schools, our public schools, in terms of arts education kind of being the first to go when budget decisions need to be made. And so there's not a lot of arts in the schools anymore. And so what this foundation is doing is kind of skipping around all the bureaucracy that sometimes public school districts have, and really giving support in the way of $500,000 over 5 years to school principals to decide, because they know best about what's happening in the four walls of their school buildings, about the kinds of arts programming that they want to do, the kinds of arts teachers that they want to bring in to support their culture, their school environment, and their young people. So that's another project that we're working on, kind of managing that portfolio and ensuring that our school principals have the supports they need to deliver exemplary arts education programming. You know, when I talk about sustainable efforts, you know, the efforts have to be worth sustaining. And some people miss that part. You know, I'm not suggesting that every organization needs to keep their doors open. Some organizations need to think about closing their doors. Maybe we no longer have enough capacity in this space. Maybe we want to consider going back full circle to how I started, merging, restructuring. You know, we go further together than alone, right? Farther together than alone. So, you know, the opportunity to think about, you know, to have some space. Again, this is why evaluation is so important. What impact are we making? What impact are we having? How do, for instance, in our school with the school principals in that scenario, really helping school principals become better consumers, right? So not every arts vendor that you work with, not every teaching artist that you work with may work for your environment or for your school. And so how do you increase your capacity in terms of becoming better art consumers for your school? So those are some of the things that we've been fortunate enough to work on. And we worked in other issue areas around affordable housing. There's actually a project now. And a lot of times we have really good exploratory conversations about, you know, community development, community work. So a lot of times we will do kind of large stakeholder engagement and facilitation, getting communities to come together. For instance, in New York, actually in Westchester, there is an opportunity for a vacant lot in a local community group to actually gain access or to buy this vacant lot to support co-working spaces, to support entrepreneurial efforts, business development, kind of a business development center, if you will. And so a lot of it has been conversations with people and leaders in community about, you know, how to carve out their piece in terms of how we're supporting families. And
okay.
Those conversations have been really fascinating.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as you look across those examples that you shared, what I really love about your work is the tie that binds them and the dots that connect, at least particularly the first three that you shared, have this recurring theme of the need to provide support and secondary level of focus, if you will, around children and learning and education. And I mean, as you know, and as all of, you know, everything that's around us continues to remind us that we're living in some really consequential times. And frankly, you know, a lot of people are, you know, their hopes are up in the air in terms of kind of what that's going to mean for our children and our next generation. And so I'm really encouraged and fascinated by the work that you're doing. One, because it brings, in all cases, it brings focus and at least a shared priority around that, you know, even as governments, you know, may, you know, wean or turn their attention away from or shift perspectives on the priority around learning, that there are organizations in place that are already doing the work to focus and make sure that we kind of keep them front and center. And I had a really important, I think it was an important conversation just the other day around someone that it has some philanthropic ambitions in that really are going to be able to highlight where how much support will be needed for to be able to drive, you know, children and reading and their love of learning. As I had this conversation, where I landed was just this recognition that, you know, even if we make decisions that feel like that they, you know, make it a less or different priority, what we're going to learn, you know, a really tough and challenging lesson about the importance of education and the importance of putting funding around it and buffering it and making sure that we keep it pristine and that it gets delivered well and that we're, you know, and that we're growing bright and informed and intelligent and a knowledgeable new generation. So I think that, like, you know, what I take encouragement from in the examples that in examples that you shared is that, you know, we can be really strategic and intentional about the direction of funding to make sure that the projects, the kind of work that you're doing is happening. You know, I get the opportunity to work with you. I find the work that we're doing with Casey on the two generational front just, you know, it's simple and understanding why it's important that you invest both in children and adults at the same time to make sure that the efficacy of the programs that you're delivering, and it's kind of almost like a no duh moment, you know, that you get it. But then as you're trying to do it, you realize how tough that is to do and how important it is to measure it in the right way and to positioning and to give tools and resources to be able to do it. So I applaud that you stay true to the work that you're really passionate about. But I think that is a great segue for where I'd like for you to share some additional thoughts. And that is, you know, I've always found through the years that you and I have had the opportunity to work together, that you've always been really intentional about the next work that you're going to go after. And it's almost like you, this whole notion of the universe conspiring in your favor, you give a really clear message to the universe. This is the work that I'm going to do next. And, and then you and I, then you call me with this, okay, Reggie, I don't believe it. I just got this phone call of this work that I just said.
It's always like
this
that,
work,
Reggie.
This work that I just said that I want to do this work, I got a phone call. Somebody wants me to do this work. Isn't that amazing? And you're like the poster child for when the universe conspiring in your favor. But I think that is of no, like, just happenstance. I think that is because you have good clarity on what you're passionate about, and you're very intentional about positioning for it in a way that you might not even recognize. You're just doing you. You're just being Erica. But I think that, but what I think is really powerful is how that unfolds and manifests itself in type. I have the opportunity to help clients frame up go-to-market strategies that, you know, that really try to, in some ways, manufacture this, and you really can't. But talk about, like, if you had to, you know, having had that observation for the stream that connected the work that you're doing and recognizing the work that you're really passionate about, talk about any either epiphanies or any pivot moments or, like, major, like, kind of crossroads that you've had both in your career and in the work that you're doing with the Iberio Group that you feel like you could pass on as a nugget of wisdom to others on how they can do it more like you do in order to be able to bring about the passionate work that you seem to always get called to do.
Well, it helps having people like you in my corner, Reggie. And I don't say that in jest. It really has been a real pleasure having you as a mentor and a coach, and someone really providing a lot of guidance. Just in these few years that we've known and have been working together, you know, very rarely do you meet someone whose life's purpose and passion is about helping people unify their hearts and minds with the work that they do. And so I really value and appreciate all the support that you've provided me over the years. And I mean, I really do. And you helped me really set a clear intention. So if there was a nugget that I wanted to offer to our audience, it's really being, you know, setting some clear intentions. And in order to do that, you have to do the work, right? You got to ask the tough questions. You got to do the tough assessments. You got to really look in the mirror and figure out kind of, you know, where do I find my most joy? Where are there opportunities for me to learn? What are the pressure points for me? You know, pressure's good. You know, diamonds come out of pressure. And really kind of being really clear about all of that. And sometimes it's our original thought. So, like, when we started the Iberio Group, our tagline was community development solutions. We wanted to create a space that touched on the soft skills and support for organizations, but also some bricks and mortar stuff too. We wanted to be in real estate development, affordable housing, really building up communities that people can be proud to come home to at night. And so for me, that's kind of the intention that I'm coming full circle. And I think a lot of us, what it usually means when we kind of step out on faith is that we're coming full circle to our original purpose. It's never lost. You know, what I like to call it remembering, right? It's not that we don't know, it's that we remember what it is that we wanted to do. And so for me, I was reminded that I really want to be in this bricks and mortar space, real estate space, affordable housing space. I want to be, you know, do affordable housing in a responsible way, building communities. And so that's really, I think, the next chapter for the Iberio Group. And that, I think, I know, is the next chapter for the Iberio Group, really thinking about in some of our more distressed communities, some places in Alabama, some places in Michigan, some places in Ohio, you know, there are opportunities where there are people of color who are living who need support to build their communities. And so for mm-hmm. me, you know, I'm trying to partner with, you know, real estate developers, affordable housing developers, providing some support around how do we build beautiful communities for all people. So that's kind of the space that our Valberio group is really stepping into, and we've just been fortunate, I would say, over the past couple of months to meet people who thrive in this space, local community development corporations, national community development corporations, individuals who are also very passionate about this work. And so for me, it's kind of practicing what I preach around having a plan, around thinking about how do we leverage partners and resources in this space to do more. And I think really having a clear sense of, you know, these things don't happen overnight. You know, they
right,
building
right.
communities is work. It's hard work. It takes time. I'm fine with all of that. I got nothing but time. I keep telling my friends I'm gonna outlive all y'all. So I gotta make this count because I plan to be here for a very, very long time. So I gotta make this life count. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's really powerful because I think that, you know, kind of from coming from a perspective of, you know, just well being, you know,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that you're really focused on the impact that you're having with this life that we're given. I think it absolutely echoes from the work that you're doing. And if history, you know, proves itself as it has with you for the, you know, number of years that I've known you, this time next year we'll be having this conversation again, and we'll be talking about the great community empowerment work that you've done this year because you've spoke it into being, and you've already, you know, it's interesting because you talk about the work that you're looking forward to doing in a year or so, and I look at some of the work that we've done, you know, we've been able to do together with the strategic planning around some of the communities. You know, you're already headed in that direction. You've already got momentum in that direction. And I look around and you know, just recognizing where momentum is occurring in the, you know, in the areas that we are in, and frankly, in some cases that we're not in. I think there is a very natural magnetization, if you will, coming together of supply and demand around just helpful insights. And I appreciate the kind words you shared about the work that we've done together. But frankly, you know, I feel like it is an absolute natural and mutual sentiment in that I find your work particularly fulfilling. I absolutely love working with both you and your clients. I'm humbled and thankful that I have the opportunity to not only focus on the Alberio group and, you know, for you, it's, you know, it's, I'm reminded of the work that we did early on in our relationship, just to kind of look at the track record of projects that you delivered and think about, you know, I remember the exercise, we just kind of went through each client and project, and I asked you where that project came from, and what, you know, really what came from that exercise was this really powerful echoing of this word of mouth where, you know, your clients think highly of the work that you deliver, and it echoes, you know, time and time and time again. So really, it was just it's just a matter of, you know, bringing you front of mind for clients and making sure that they remember some of the great work, so that we get an opportunity to, you know, to do more work, you know, and even through that exercise, you know, it, just the opportunity to, you know, join you, you know, pull up a iPad and join you on a project, you know, and be able to frame up strategies, you know, driven with the direction around your model. I find some of the most fulfilling work that we've been able to do. So I celebrate the relationship that we have, and I look forward to, you know, continuing to pursue more of that. And frankly, I feel like this conversation is really a significant milestone for that, just the, you know, us being able to have clarity around that. So thank you for the opportunity. Absolutely.
Thank you, Reggie. Thank you so much.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we because our work started, really in you know, towards the first to second quarter of your Crescendo's existence, you know, this whole notion of finding your forte for an organization is, you know, one that's fascinating to kind of take a look at now, the way that we are in these conversations that we're having across the show. And so I really appreciate you coming to share that perspective with us. And, you know, as I have shared with our listeners across this series of conversations, this notion of finding your forte is one that requires, and I appreciate, Erica, your insights to encourage people to be intentional and to go through the assessments and diagnostics to better understand themselves so that we can put them in the best light. And that's really what finding your forte is all about. So I look forward to the conversations. And frankly, if there are any listeners that are interested in exploring the program and whether it's one that is for you, definitely send a message to me at info@yourcrescendo.com. That's Y-O-U-R Crescendo, C-R-E-S-C-E-N-D-O.com. I would absolutely appreciate the opportunity to share more about it. But Erica, thank you so much for spending the hour with us this morning. I am illuminated back to the ethereal mantra. I am illuminated by the conversation, and I would imagine that our listeners are as well. So thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so with that, we will look to wish you all to have a great day. Hopefully it is productive and as prosperous as we wish for it to be with this conversation. We look forward to bringing you another conversation at the same time next week. And as we go and we're listening to the amazing song that we're excited to have as the theme of our show, as our show, Free Your Dreams by Shante Khan. I would encourage you to check that song out and put it in frequent play on your music inspiration track list. Definitely go and there's a link. There's a link on the site for the show for you to find it on iTunes. But with that, we would encourage you to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. We look forward to talking to you this time next week.
Learning from my past.